Thank you, everyone. We're going to do some learning today, and we're going to do it in a fun way. So I've asked five people to come forward. So you five already preset. Come on up. Let's go. A little faster. Okay, and go to the places where you think you're supposed to be. Good. There we go. Come on up. Excellent. And one more. Let's all take a step forward so I can be behind you and they can still see me. Okay, we have five people up here. They each represent something different. I'm going to begin over here to your left and my right. This is Brock. Brock teaches the Tuesday night study. And let's welcome Brock. Thank you, Brock. You represent 2,000. Just remember the word 2,000. This is Paul, and Paul runs one of our men's ministry on Wednesday night. Let's welcome Paul. And Paul represents 1,500. 2,000, 1,500. And this is Elsie. And Elsie is one of our leaders in Awana. She's a leader in training. After you graduate Awana, some stay and are part of a leadership training program, and she's a part of this. And Elsa, you represent 1,000. This is Donna, and Donna is a part of our outreach ministry. She's a prayer warrior, part of our women's ministry, and many other things. I can't even go through all the things she does to help the community. And thank you, Donna, for your prayers for Elizabeth and me. She always is praying for us. She represents 500, so let's welcome Donna. And then Percy is here. Lee and his wife lead a Monday Bible study as well. I think it's in Spanish as well, so working with some of the Latins in our community and an outreach study as well. And you represent 0, okay? So here we go. Now, this is the entire Old Testament in the Bible here. These five people represent it. If we start a little to the left of Brock, is Genesis 1 through 11, the creation of the world, Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel, the Tower of Babel, Noah and the Ark. And then we get to chapter 12 of Genesis, which begins the main story of the Bible. It's the story of the Hebrew people, the Jews. And who was the first Hebrew? Abraham. So you represent Abraham. Abraham lived at about the year 2000. Another key character of the Old Testament is Moses. Moses lived approximately around 1500. And then there is David, King David. He lived at about 1,000 years before Christ. Abraham, Moses, David. Esther lived just after 500 BC, about 490 BC, Esther. And then the last character of the Old Testament is John the Baptist. Though he is in the New Testament writings, he is still a part of the Old Testament. And I put him, though it's the first couple of decades of the new millennium, he's still, I put you at 0. So let's see if we remember this. Who is Brock? Abraham. Paul is? Moses. Elsie is? Donna is? And who is Percy? John the Baptist. In Genesis chapter 12, God called out Abram, who we call now Abraham, and his wife Sarai, who we call Sarah, and said, I want to send you to a land that I will show you. And so they went, and they left what is approximately Kuwait, and went up the Tigris and Euphrates River, and then spent some years, and then came back down into what was then called Canaan, or Palestine, what now will be later called Israel. And Abraham was the first to come, and he was called by God to go to a land which God promised him. He had a son named Isaac and had a son named Jacob who had 12 sons. One of them was Joseph. And Joseph was sold into slavery and left the land, and then he brought all his brothers and father with him to the land of Egypt. Do you remember that? And for 400 years approximately, they were in the land of Egypt. This is the story told at the end of the book of Genesis. And the story is over. And then we come to Moses in Exodus chapter 1, 2, and 3, and we realize that God wants to send them back to the land. And he calls Moses, the burning bush in early Exodus, and calls Moses, and Moses comes and takes his people out of the land of Egypt and begins to take them back to the land, the promised land, flowing with milk and honey, but they don't want to go. And for 40 years, they wander in the wilderness. Do you remember the story? That's Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. So from here to here, 500 years is the first five books of the Bible. Moses dies, overlooking from Moab across the Jordan River to see the land, but never gets to go in the land. And God calls Joshua to go in, and Joshua goes in, and he destroys Jericho and destroys the other cities, and the people go across, and they develop the land, and they get there. And once they get there, they have a series of judges. Do you remember the judges? The judges are Samson. We know the story of Samson, Delilah, Gideon, the great judge Deborah. They're all there. And then comes a little story of the book of Ruth, which we just talked about in December and January. We're right about here now. And Ruth and Boaz have a son named Obed. And Obed has a son named Jesse. And Jesse has eight sons, the youngest being David. And there's a point in time right here where the people no longer wanted a judge, and they had a priest named Samuel, and they begged Samuel to get a king like all the other countries. And God said, you don't need a king. I am the king. And they kept saying it. And finally, God says, you can have a king. And who was the first king? Saul. And then Saul ended, and David became king. What's amazing, the book of 1 and 2 Samuel takes place right here with Hannah, Samuel, Saul, and David. And that's what we're going to be studying over the next year from time to time. But then there were all these kings. Some were good kings, some were bad kings. God kind of got fed up with all the bad. And in fact, you hear stories of Isaiah trying to bring them back to the Lord and the other prophets bringing them back to the Lord. And they wouldn't go back to the Lord. And so God exiled them. First, the northern kingdom, he exiled up, and they're long gone. And then the southern kingdom got exiled. You remember the story of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the fiery furnace, the story of Ezekiel and the dry bones, the story of Jeremiah that I just quoted, all come into play right here. And for 70 years, they were in Babylon, and they were exiled away from the land. And then God called them back. First, he called them back with Ezra and Zerubbabel and then Nehemiah to rebuild the temple, to rebuild the walls, to rebuild the worship. And now we're towards the end, and then there was this great lady named Esther. And we know the story of Esther, don't we? Which ends the Old Testament. And there are approximately 400 years of silence here, where God did not speak to his people at all. Nothing. And then came a man out of the wilderness. Prepare ye the way of the Lord. There is one who is coming who is greater than me. And people began to follow this man, John the Baptist. And John the Baptist said, don't follow me, follow the other one. And Jesus Christ came on the scene. And the whole New Testament, the whole Gospels, is about Jesus Christ. No, it's not. The whole Bible is about Jesus Christ. You see, Matthew chapter 1, verse 1 says this, the genealogies of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. The first verse of the New Testament connects the entire Old Testament to Jesus Christ. What does that mean? What that means is you can read the Bible from the front, start in Genesis and read all the way through it, and keep reading and keep reading and keep reading, or you can read the Bible backwards. It's one of the few books you can read from back to front, because the entire Old Testament can be read through the lens of Jesus Christ. This church, as it's one of its foundations, says we are Christ-centered. I believe that every scripture leads to the Messiah, speaks about the Messiah, or talks about the Messiah after the fact. Books like Corinthians and Romans and the other epistles. And then the book of Revelation takes us back to the very beginning, the new earth, the new creation. Now, what do we learn here? Are you guys doing okay? Are they doing all right? Okay, I'm gonna keep them up here for a little longer. There's three key things about the Old Testament. I want you to write them down because they come to play in the story of 1 and 2 Samuel, but we don't think about it if we only think about Jesus Christ. So you have to kind of understand this. God, number one, is interested in the land. God is interested in the land of Israel. You can call it sometimes Palestine, Canaan. It was called other things throughout the years, but I will just call it Israel. God called Abraham to come to the land. God called Moses to take the people back to the land. God called David to rule over the land. God called right here Daniel and others, Ezra, Nehemiah, Zerubbabel, to take people back to the land. But something changed here with Jesus. He doesn't talk about the land anymore, does he? He talks about the kingdom, but then he says, "My kingdom is not of this world." So why is it so important with the land? Because I believe that God had a certain place he wanted all this to happen. A certain place. That place is Israel. That place is Jerusalem, founded in the book of 1 and 2 Samuel by David 3,020 years ago. 1,000 BC, 2,020 years later. That's 3,020 years ago. Jerusalem was founded, and God wanted it there. And Jerusalem is also called, just outside of the modern city of Jerusalem, just adjacent on the south, the city of David. It is in a certain land with a certain group of people that God wanted his Messiah to come. And you go, why? Why wasn't it with the Norwegians? I don't know. Or the Brazilians. Or the Haitians, Jamaicans, or the Americans. I have no idea. He said, these are the promised people. He said, this is the promised land. He said, I'm going to provide a Messiah by these people in this land. And then the first book, the first paragraph after the Gospels, what does he say? Go into all the world. Leave the land. Isn't that interesting? Leave the land, go into all the world. Whether you're in Samaria, Jerusalem, or the uttermost parts, tell the story that occurred in the land to everyone else. And can I tell you, we are the everyone else. Now, there may be a few people from Israel here, but even if you're Jewish and not from Israel, you're a part of the everyone else. And we have been told the story to tell everyone else outside the land. Let's thank these people and we'll continue. Thank you. So why do we study 1 and 2 Samuel? Because though it's not in the middle of the Old Testament by all the pages, it is dead center in the middle of the Old Testament. And it's not just historically in the dead center, it is the meaning is in the center. You always hear me call David High King David. It kind of goes like this to the middle, and then it kind of goes like this till you get to the end of the Old Testament. And the high point of the Old Testament is David in 1 and 2 Samuel. And we're going to look at that. Now, one last thing, an introduction of this, and then I'll give you the other 2 points. The first point is that God was interested in the land. I'll give you the other points in just a minute, is that I said for the 500 years, the first 5 books hit the 500 years from Genesis to Deuteronomy is here. The next 12 books of the Old Testament, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, 1st, 2nd Samuel, 1st, 2nd Kings, 1st, 2nd Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther, that's 12 books, tell the history I just gave you, except for John the Baptist. And then all the other books of the Old Testament fit into the history that I gave you. So if you're reading Isaiah, it fits into the history. If you're reading Malachi, it fits into the history. If you're reading the Psalms, it fits into the history. Do you see that? And the history is between the 1500 and the 500. And that is where most of the Bible fits in that 1,000 years. Now, people come up to me and go, did Esther and Ruth know each other? Okay, well, Esther is here and Ruth is here. Did Abraham know Daniel? No, that would be like saying, did I know William the Conqueror? No. Esther to Jesus is like us to Christopher Columbus. And here's the one that's hard to believe. Abraham to Jesus is like Jesus to us. That's how far it is. From Jesus to us, that 2,000 years is the 2,000 years from Jesus to Abraham. There's a lot going on. And yet this book of the Old Testament is unbelievable, isn't it? Why is it that it is so coordinated in all that it is? If it was written on 3 continents by dozens of people in multiple languages, over 2,000 years of history, at least 1,500 years of history, how can it all be coming together and coordinated? It's only one answer, because of God. So let's look at that. Point number one is the land. Point number two, and Elizabeth alluded to this, and this is why it's so important when you read the Bible to read and ask it, what does it say about God? Because the Bible is a book about God. Just understand that the Bible is a book about God. And if I can be a little flippant for a moment, it's not about you. Anybody who does this, God, give me a word today. Maybe he will, out of your foolishness. But this book is not about you. This book is for you to know about God. This book is a God book. That's why it's so transcendent. That's why when David was reading Genesis and when you read Genesis, you get the same out of it. Maybe a little different, maybe different language, different context, ancient world, modern world, but it is just as applicable. Some of you read a proverb a day. Does anybody read in the Proverbs every day? Raise your hand. Yeah, there's many. Why do you do that? It was written 3,000 years ago. You do it because it applies today, because it's a book about God and God doesn't change. And then it's a book about life. And what's amazing is people go, oh yeah, but Northerners are different than Southerners and Westerners are different than Easterners and old people are different than young people and ancients are different than moderns. And you're right, there is a little difference, but ultimately we're all the same. We're all people. We all need love. We're all sinners. We need a relationship to God. Right? It's so, so important. So let's look in 1 Samuel. I want to give you 2 key verses in 1 Samuel, if I could. The first one is 1 Samuel 16, verse 7. And I'm jumping into context, and so you're going to get context later as we walk through it. But I want to give you key verses. The 2 key verses of First and Second Samuel both. And by the way, I may call the book Samuel because it was one book. If you're Jewish, the Jewish scriptures have Samuel as one book. We in English can't handle big books, so we divided it a couple hundred years ago. No, I'm serious. Ezra, Nehemiah, that was one book, and they separated it. First and Second Kings was one book called the Kings. First, Second Chronicle, one book called the Chronicles. This was the book of Samuel, but someone years ago said, well, let's divide it out into First and Second Samuel. Okay, whatever they wanted to do. Verse 7. Let me get to it. But the Lord said to Samuel, this is 16 of 1 Samuel, so we don't confuse ourselves. Do not look on his appearance or on the height or his stature, because I have rejected him. I won't go into the details. This was the calling of David, but here's the key thing. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Underline that. The Lord sees not as we see. So what we learn here is that both of us see. God sees and we see. But what God sees is different than what we see. And what is the difference? Man and women, that's generic man, humankind, looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. Now, that's the key verse here. God sees differently than we see. God looks differently than we look, and I don't mean his looks, but how he looks. And really, it should be sees again, but they put the word look in English so that we don't get confused between seeing and looking. But God sees the inside of your heart. You and I cannot see the inside of each other's heart. We think we can. We try to. I really try to, and I think I know my wife's heart better than most and probably better than any other human, but I don't know it as good as God, nor does she even know her heart like God knows her heart, because God can see deep into our lives. I see the outward side. Everybody in here looks good. You're well-dressed. You're this. You're that. You've come to church, so I make all these assumptions about you. And only because I see. Then afterwards, you'll say some words to me. You'll be nice to me. You'll be mean to me. You'll be whatever to me. And then I'll make more assumptions. But I don't really know, do I? Because you can fake me out. You can fake your spouse out. You can even sometimes fake your kids out. Not as much as you think you can, but you try. You could certainly fake your boss out, your friends out. But there's one you cannot fake out, is there? Who is that? God, because God sees even places where you cannot even see. And that is the beautiful thing about understanding God, because when we look at all that God does in 1 and 2 Samuel, we're going, my goodness, I didn't see that coming. And I've read this many, many times. When you read through the Bible, you zip through these stories. We're going to take our time through these stories and understand that God sees. God saw about Abraham. God saw about Moses. I mean, I would have let Moses in the promised land, people. After all he went through, I would have let him through in the promised land. God saw something different than I did. Right? I mean, David, then he calls David a man after his own heart. I would have gone, man, David, you kind of blew it. When you read about David in here, you're going to realize he is just a normal guy at some times and even less than normal. And God says he was a man after his own heart. I saw David differently than God sees David. I saw Moses differently than God sees Moses, because God sees differently than we see, and we need to understand it. The other verse that's so key, flip backwards to chapter 15 and verse 22. And this brings me to my third point, but before I do, we need to understand that God is present in our lives. If you get anything out of the study of the Old Testament, God was present in the Old Testament. And God is still present. Thirdly, God demands something from us. And there's all kinds of sin. This book is filled with everything. It's an R-rated book. It is not a PG book. It's not even PG-13. This is an R-rated book. There's some massive things that go on in this book. And then in verse 22, he says this, "Has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifice as in obeying his voice?" So there's an argument, and again, I'm jumping into context. Which is better, giving to God or obeying God? That's like today, too. I have so many people who want to give to God to kind of pay their penance for rather than obeying God. "Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to listen to God more than the fat of rams." Just a key theme of the entire Bible is that God would rather have our obedience than our sacrifice. He would rather have us obeying him than giving to him. And I don't know the difference. I think, oh, you tithe and you give, so you must be obeying. There's not necessarily a correlation there. And it's important for us to understand. But here is the beauty of the sacrifice in the Old Testament, and it's true in the New Testament, which we'll get to in another time, is this. If you don't obey, there is a way out. If you don't obey, there is a way out. It's called confession and repentance. And what you will discover in Samuel is what Jesus says. Saul sinned and didn't confess and repent. David sinned and confessed and repented. Saul goes out in a flame like this. David becomes the high king. Not because he was better than Saul, but then when he didn't obey God, he confessed and repented. And that is what God is calling us to. Now, just for fun, I want you to watch this video. You guys have it?
The books of 1 and 2 Samuel. They're two separate books in our modern Bibles, but that division is due simply to scroll length. It was originally written as one coherent story. We're just going to cover the book of 1 Samuel in this video. So after Israel was rescued from slavery in Egypt, they made a covenant with God at Mount Sinai and eventually came into the Promised Land. And there, Israel was supposed to be faithful to God and obey the covenant commands. Before the book of Samuel, Judges showed how Israel failed at that task big time. It was a period of moral chaos, and it showed Israel's need for wise, faithful leaders. The book of Samuel provides an answer to that need. The book of Samuel's story focuses on three main characters: the prophet Samuel, where the book gets its name, and then King Saul, and after that, King David. And all three of them transitioned Israel from a group of tribes ruled by judges into a unified kingdom ruled by King David in Jerusalem. And the book of Samuel has a fascinating design that weaves the story of these three characters together in four main parts. Samuel, he's the key leader and prophet in the first section of the book, but then he also plays a key role in the next section, which is Saul's story, and it's told in two movements: Saul's rise to power and then his failures. And the second part is about his downfall and his tragic death. And then the drama of Saul's demise is matched by David's exciting rise to power. And then David's story is told in two movements. First, he rides the wave of his success, followed by his own tragic failure and the slow self-destruction of his family and then his kingdom. The book concludes with an epilogue that reflects back over the whole story. So let's dive in and see how this all unfolds. Part one picks up from the chaos of the book of Judges, and we're introduced to a touching story about a woman named Hannah. And she's grieved because she has never been able to have children. And by God's grace, she finally has a son named Samuel. And in joy, she sings this amazing poem in chapter two. And the poem is all about how God opposes the proud and exalts the humble, about how despite tragedies and human evil, God is working out his purposes in history. And also it's about how God will one day raise up an anointed king for his people. Now Hannah's poem has been placed here at the beginning of the book to introduce these key themes that we're going to see throughout the whole story, like the next one. Samuel grows up and becomes a great prophet and leader for the people of Israel, at the same time that the Philistines rise to power as Israel's arch nemesis. And in this crucial battle, the Israelites get arrogant, and instead of praying and asking God for help, they trot out the Ark of the Covenant as this kind of magic trophy that will automatically grant them victory in battle. And so because of their arrogant presumption, God allows Israel to lose the battle, and the Ark is stolen. So the Philistines, they take the Ark, and they place it in the temple of their god, Dagon. And then the God of Israel defeats the Philistines and the god Dagon without an army by sending plagues on the people. And then the Philistines don't want the ark anymore, obviously, and they send it back to Israel. And the point of this little story seems to be this. God is not Israel's trophy, and he opposes pride among the Philistines, but also among his own people. And so Israel needs to remain humble and obedient if they want to experience God's covenant blessing, which opens up into the next large section. The Israelites come to Samuel, and they say, hey, we want a king like all the other nations have. Go find one for us. And so Samuel, he's kind of ticked off, and he goes to consult with God. And God says, yes, their motives are all wrong, but if a king is what they want, give them one. And so we're introduced to the figure of Saul. Now, Saul is a tragic figure because he begins full of promise. He's tall, he's good-looking, he's a perfect candidate for a king. But he has deep character flaws. He's dishonest, he lacks integrity, and he seems incapable of acknowledging his own mistakes. And so these flaws become his downfall. He wins some battles at the beginning, but his flaws run so deep, he eventually disqualifies himself by blatantly disobeying God's commands. And so the aging Samuel confronts Saul and Israel. He had warned the people that they would only benefit from a king who's humble and faithful to God. Otherwise, the kings of Israel will bring ruin. So he informs Saul that God is going to raise up a new king to replace him. And so Saul's downfall begins, as God, at the same time, is working behind the scenes to raise up that new king. It's an insignificant shepherd boy named David. He's the least likely candidate to be king, but the famous story of David and Goliath shows that God's choice of David is not based on his family status, but simply on his radical and humble trust in the God of Israel. And so this story embodies all of the themes of Hannah's poem. Proud Saul and Goliath are brought low, while humble David is exalted. From here, we watch Saul slowly descend into madness, while David rises to power. So David starts working for Saul as a general, and he's winning all of the battles, and he's also winning all of the fame. And so Saul gets jealous, and he starts chasing David around, hunting him, trying to kill him. David's done nothing wrong, and so David simply runs and waits in the wilderness. And here we see David's true character. He has multiple opportunities to kill Saul, but he doesn't. He simply trusts that despite Saul's evil, God will raise up a king for his people. What's interesting, too, is that many of the poems of David that you find in the book of Psalms are linked to this very period of his life, and they all express the same attitude of trust. And so this section of the book ends with Saul coming to a grisly death after losing a battle with the Philistines. 1 Samuel tells some of the most intricate, well-told stories you find anywhere in the Bible, and the characters Saul and David, they're portrayed very realistically. And the author's putting them forward as character studies so that you can find yourself in them. So in Saul's story, we see a warning. It's crucial that we reflect on our own character flaws and how they harm us and other people. And with God's help, we need to humble ourselves and deal with our dark side so that Saul's story doesn't become ours. David, on the other hand, is presented as an example of patience and trust in God's timing in our lives. And so he's running in the wilderness, being chased by Saul. David had every reason to think that God had abandoned him, but that's not what he thinks. And so David's story encourages us to trust that despite human evil, God is working out his purposes to oppose the proud and to exalt the humble. And that's what 1 Samuel is all about.
Did you get it? Wow. Now, the reason I showed that is because I want you to read the book, the Bible, because you go, I know the story. Well, maybe there's more to this story than you know. We need to close. I want to share something that happened to me yesterday. Yesterday, I had the joy of doing a wedding of one of our members to one of our family. That was interesting. So one of the members of our church married one of the members of Elizabeth in my family. He was a member, the family member is a doctor. He doesn't live here, lives down in Broward, goes to another church. We don't get to see him too often because he lives down there, works down there, and doctors have long hours. He's an oral surgeon, and so not much, but our member here is Jen. She's a part of the young professionals, and his name's Philip. So Jen and Philip, we actually did a public ceremony. They had gotten married about 6 months ago in a small ceremony. So we had this great wedding. It was an amazing time. It was just a joy to do it, again, because one's a family member, the other is a member of our church. So the way I asked them a few weeks ago, I said, how did you meet? And they go, quite interestingly, they had met from someone who they didn't know each other, and none of us introduced them. And my daughter is very close friends with Jen and obviously knows the other, so none of us introduced them. So they went for a dinner. They drove separately, as kind of people do nowadays, drove separately, went to the dinner, and the first thing that Philip said after the hellos and everything, he goes, we just got to get down to this. Where do you go to church? And she didn't want to tell him where she goes to church, because she didn't know him well enough and goes, is he going to follow me around? And is he wanting to know everything I do and all this stuff? And so it was kind of an interesting thing. So she was being coy with him and going, well, you know, I go to church in Boca. And he goes, no, this isn't going to work if I don't know where you go to church. Because he kind of wanted to know what her background was and all. So finally she goes, I go to Boca Raton Community Church. And he goes, Uncle Bill's church? And she goes, Pastor Bill's church? And they had a laugh about it and connected and obviously and all. But when they went to the car, he walked her to her car. She got in on the phone right away and called my daughter and said, tell me about Philip. Well, what I need to tell you is there's two Philips in our family. There's Philip the doctor, 38 years old, down in Broward, and there's the Philip, the student in college, who is a very close friend of my family. I mean, lives here, they go to church here, we grew up, some of my kids grew up with them, we're very close to them, where we're not so close to him because he's lived in another country and lives in Broward. And so Jackie is thinking of college Philip while she's describing Dr. Philip. And she said to him, he's a little young for you. And she described all these great character qualities, which were true of the young Philip. So she's talking about the young Philip, my daughter, while Jen is talking about the older Philip. And they were like misaligned. And then finally, one of them said, you know, he's in college, or I think my daughter, and no, he's a doctor. And then they had a laugh, and she goes, oh, you mean Philip Joseph's, not Philip Barber. Yes. Oh, he's a great guy, and off they went and had a whole nother conversation. I say that because sometimes when we say David, sometimes when we say the Bible, we think one thing, and it's really another. And this is really the case in many of these stories. Oh, I know the story of David and Goliath. Well, you know this story, but there's really this story. Oh, I know the story of Hannah and the birth of Samuel. What a great thing. No, we're going to learn the real story here because there's a deeper, greater story. And though you may know the name, you may not know the person. You may not know what God's trying to do, but we need your help, and that is, I need you to be reading the Bible through the week so that when we come together on Sundays, we will have all read it, looked at it, studied it a little, and then we come together with some truths. Can we do that? Amen. Let's pray together.